why are they doing this? Why do they want this? Why do they want us hating each other so much? I don't understand that.
And then they pin this hatred and the divisiveness on Trump, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
It really doesn't. There's going to be awful people. There's going to be evil in the world, right? But I don't really think that America is a racist country. I don't believe that.
The Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast.
Can I get a little bit of that common sense?
Very, very excited about this week's Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast because we have a very, very special guest with us, David Harris Jr. This is long overdue.
So excited.
Long overdue.
So excited.
So good to have you.
Yes. Welcome.
So good to be
here.
Thank
you very much.
And absolutely a pleasure and an honor. Love you, ladies. Love everything that you do. Love your show. It's a pleasure to be on here.
Thank you.
Wow. We're not worthy.
Exactly. We're doing a little Wayne's World right now. Yeah.
David Harris Jr., you're an author, a speaker, a leader in the conservative movement, and now a fellow for the Fall Kirk Center. You're the host of your own show at davidharrisjr.com, and you reach millions and millions of people every single month. You've got a huge social following network, which is, of course, how we found you. You're also the author of the book, Why I Couldn't Stay Silent. You've been on all the Fox shows, all the TV shows. You have become an authority and a really prominent figure in the conservative movement, and rightly so. Your voice is needed now more than ever. And so much that we want to talk to you about, because you have been making me bawl in some of your latest Instagram videos that I've seen, especially the one that really got to me the most, I think, is the one that you released right when you found out about George Floyd and the murder of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And you were just finding out about that. It looked like you were in a grocery store parking lot or somewhere where you had just discovered the news, and it was so raw and powerful. Talk about your reaction. Talk about that video and maybe some of the videos that you have felt have gotten the most attention and traction with some of your viewers.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, obviously the murder of George Floyd was tragic. It was very hard to watch. My wife and I had actually just dropped my car off at a car wash. We were in Redding, California, visiting our hometown, and we were walking across the street to get something to eat when I was scrolling Twitter, and I saw Sean King post something, and I follow him to just kind of keep my ear to what the other side, you know, is kind of saying and talking about. And I only saw a clip, and then I found the full-length video, and I sat down to watch it, and I just was mortified. I was just absolutely just distraught at what I was witnessing, hoping that it didn't, because I had heard that he was killed, but I was hoping that wasn't what I was going to actually see. And about halfway through the video, my wife stopped watching. She couldn't watch it anymore. And I just felt like I had to watch it. I felt like I needed to watch it in its entirety. And then I sat there, and it was a big open parking lot where I sat. I sat there for probably 10 or 15 minutes, just silent and just stunned at what I had just watched. I just felt like I had to say something. So I just turned record on and just recorded myself walking around this parking lot. And I think it was a good thing I was in a big, wide open, empty parking lot, because I got pretty loud. And I think I felt the anger, the outrage, the distrust against police that the liberal left and that the liberal media continually pushes on all of us. However, at the same time, I was feeling that I know that that's not the truth. I don't believe, and the facts don't back up, that white officers are just out hunting down and killing black individuals. Mm-hmm. The facts actually show, and the data actually shows, that more white individuals are killed and unarmed individuals are killed by police than blacks. And there's so much other data that I know as well. I talk about black on black crime. I talk about fatherlessness in the home and how that affects all people of all colors. But I understood how this was going to look to anybody that viewed it, regardless of if it was racism or not, which I don't think it was racist for what this guy did. All the story now had come out that they knew each other. The police officer that murdered George Floyd was married to an Asian woman. Two of the other cops out of the four were not white. So this wasn't a racist thing that took place, but to see it and to know and understand that the mainstream media, the liberal mainstream media, has been continually pushing this narrative of racism in this country and racist cops doing bad things, I was just torn apart, you know. And I said, I hope Donald Trump, you know, our president, calls it exactly what it is, murder. He wound up did saying that exact same thing. And I just shared how, as a black conservative, You know, we're constantly looked down upon by other members of the black community for standing up for this president, for standing up for conservative values. And normally there can tend to be a sidestepping of issues when something like this happens to just redirect and focus more on black-on-black crime as a reason to not be so irate over something like that that took place. And I just felt there's no way I could do that. There's no way I could try to redirect anything. That issue, that murder, what we all saw and witnessed had to be addressed. And I just let it pour out. And it was received really well. And then I actually on Facebook, I think it hit 11 million views in a few days. And I expired it because then the riots started to take place. And I didn't want that video to in any way incite somebody or make them feel justified in criminal actions, because that's not what the video was about either. It was just sharing my raw emotion over what I had just witnessed and just letting people hear, you know, what I had to say about it.
Yeah, I definitely want to touch on the media narrative that's happening in the country and that's been happening in the country. But I want to ask you about your experience as a black man being a conservative, because, you know, you can tell we're women and we get pigeonholed. We did a whole podcast last week on the compartmentalization of people in this country and how everybody's put into little boxes, right? The media does this too, where they say, hey, you're a woman, so you have to be a liberal. You're gay, so you have to be a liberal. You're black, so you have to be a liberal. You're this, so you have to be, and they tell you what to be, right? So if you step outside of that groupthink, they automatically call you all sorts of names. Like they tell us that we're Stepford, you know, wives, and we're this and we're that, and we're not real, you know, like there must be something wrong with us because we're women and, you know, we voted for Trump, right? So, or we are conservative, or we're Republican, or we have conservative ideology, right? So what is it like for you being a black man and being conservative? Like,
I can't imagine
the hate,
because we get so much hate.
I can't, and the emails we get, and the death threats, and the restraining orders we've had to put on people just because of what we think, right? So I can only imagine what it's like for you, you know?
Yeah, you know, I didn't foresee how intense this battle would be, and I understand everything you're talking about that you receive. I get all that. My wife gets stuff, and my wife's not very outspoken on her political beliefs at all. In fact, we have a lot of in-depth conversations on things because she's not sure where she stands on certain issues. The main issue, she completely, you know, agrees with me on things, but she can get caught up in, as a lot of Americans can, what we're hearing and seeing on the mainstream media, and then I'll have to share some more information or where that information's coming from. But to get back to, you know, when I became outspoken, I wasn't really outspokenly political before Barack Obama was running for president. And when we had the opportunity as a country to potentially elect the first black man as president, I became very interested in politics and in his political stance. And my mom, God rest her soul, she's in heaven now, but one of the best things that she told me, especially for this journey that I've been on, she said, don't pay attention to what politicians say on stage. She said, pay attention to how they vote. And so when I began to research and look at Barack Obama and his voting record on issues that matter to me, one of the most important issues to me is the value on unborn lives, on unborn babies.
Yes.
When I discovered that he had voted against a bill that would have provided medical treatment for babies that survived abortions, and when I discovered that he had supported a bill in favor of partial birth abortion, literally dismembering babies in the womb, I said, I don't care what color this guy is, he's not getting my vote. And, you know, color went out the window. Unfortunately for so many and for too many people, I think he was voted in because he was a black man, because he was going to be able to become the first black president, and he did. But I began to try to expose his voting record and expose where I felt like his heart was at. To me, if it's in somebody's moral compass to dismember a baby or not provide medical treatment to a baby that's been born after it was supposed to be terminated, murdered, if that's off in their moral compass, then what else is off in their moral compass? So that's how I spent the years from 08 to 12, watching Obama do what he was doing and then completely decimating our country, our military, supporting values that didn't support, represent me as a Christian or as an American. He didn't put us first. He flew around the world and bowed to other world leaders. And it was disgusting for me to watch. So then when I had the opportunity to see Donald Trump as candidate, talk and share and then look at what he was actually saying. We didn't really have a political track record for him to go off of. And he had once been a Democrat, but he had changed to more conservative values and he changed his stance on abortion. And everything he said seemed to make a lot of sense. And one of the things that he said as far as the black community is, what the hell do you have to lose? And I really began to dig and research more. And then discovered it. I kind of just stepped into it, discovered that there was this monolithic blind allegiance from the black community to the Democrat Party, because mm-hmm. I wasn't raised that way. I was raised with conservative values. I was raised with Christian values. And we honored life. We honored babies. A baby's a baby. Whether it's still inside the womb or outside, it's a baby. And so the thought that it's a part of a party's platform, ending an unborn baby's life at any moment during pregnancy, was just abhorrent to me. So I kind of got into this. I think God brought me into this, not really knowing what I was getting into. But I'm up for the fight. I'm ready for it. And I'm glad that and honored to be able to be in this fight with the president. I'm on his campaign for Black Voices for Trump. And it's a fight of our lifetime for our country right now. So I take everything involved. That you guys get. I take it all in stride and try not to focus on the negatives.
You've been very involved in Blexit, too. Are you still a part of that movement in any official capacity?
Not in any official capacity. Candace calls on me to speak, depending on which event. I've spoken at 5 or 6 events for Blexit. Now I know they've got about 9 chapters around the country. So they're doing an amazing thing. I have 100% support for what Candace is doing. She's a good friend of mine, and she knows I'm available whenever she needs me.
Yeah.
Why do you think there is such a monolithic vote when it comes to the black community? Why is that still so prevalent that we see those numbers still so tied to the Democrat Party? I mean, despite your efforts, despite so many efforts, and there is progress, don't get me wrong, and I see that.
Yeah, because a lot of, a lot of the black folks that I know, they go to church. They know that, like, especially when it comes to abortion stuff, they know that that's wrong.
Yeah.
They know that, like, killing a baby is wrong, right? And they still will vote Democrat, right? Because it's what they've been told, like, you're supposed to vote Democrat. So what is it?
It always
like,
just
what?
Makes me crazy.
Yeah, it does. It makes us crazy. So I don't understand. What is that? Why does that happen so much, you think?
Well, I think that it goes back to the whole idea of a big switch, which to me is absolutely just insane. But as the story is told and as the facts actually will show, the Democrat Party was the party of racism. They were the party that fought for Jim Crow. They fought for segregation. The KKK was founded by Democrats. It was the militia arm of the Democrat Party. And they pushed for poll taxes and literacy tests. They fought against everything that had to do with civil rights for black Americans up until the 60s. In 1960, LBJ was actually given credit for the Civil Rights Act. The person that was going up against him, Goldwater, actually said, "I don't like it the way that it's written." And the story that the mainstream media actually pushed was that he didn't want civil rights for the black community, which was completely not accurate. So the mainstream media actually began to champion this false narrative that now all of a sudden the Democrats were the ones that pushed for civil rights for blacks, and the front runner for the Republican Party was against it. And he was against it in the way that it was written. And what took place was the way the Civil Rights Bill was passed, and the jobs that were then given to the black community, they were given jobs inside of cities that they didn't have access to before, but they actually couldn't live in those cities. They had to go back across the bridges, go back out of the cities in order to live. And that basically made it so that the black community in that time didn't have the opportunity to truly grow through the industry that was actually being built off of their own hands. Well, that's not what the mainstream media shared. That's not what the newspaper shared. The newspaper shared a narrative that the Republicans were against civil rights, and that was the story that was then shared. There was a mass exodus of the black community from the Republican Party because, again, the Republican Party was founded as the anti-slavery party. So there were more black people in the Republican Party. There weren't a lot in the Democrat Party, period, up until this point, because the black community knew that the Democrat Party was the party of racism. So this whole big switch apparently took place. And since the 60s, the black community has been sharing that narrative through the generations that have followed, so that so many of the black community just now look at the Republican Party as racist. Now, to the negative of what the GOP has done or really has not done is since there was such a monolithic approach and voting allegiance from the black community to the Democrat Party, I really don't think the GOP has done a lot up until President Donald Trump. They hadn't done a lot to try to win the black vote, because why when 90 plus percent of the black community is already going to vote a certain way? Mm-hmm. So and that's not for all the Republican Party, but I think the GOP as a whole. So what Donald Trump has done coming into office, saying what the hell do you have to lose, literally is what he said, and then having passed some of the most important historic things for the black community, has changed. It's a new GOP. It's a GOP that this president says, you know what, we're not going to just allow the black community to continue to stay tied, ball and chain, to a party that does nothing for them and except demand their votes every 4 years. He passed historic funding for historical black colleges and universities. He gave more than Obama did. And then he made it permanent funding so that the presidents of these HBCUs didn't have to go back every single year to the government and basically beg for money. I was actually in the Oval Office with the president and Candace Owens and Diamond and Silk and about 25 other black conservatives for Black History Month back in February. And to hear the president talk and share about when he discovered, as president of the United States, when he discovered that the presidents of these historical black colleges and universities had to go to the government every single year. They had to go every single year Obama was in office. Every single year they had to go and ask for funding because they weren't sure if they'd be able to meet their budget. They weren't sure if they'd be able to keep their schools open. And the president said, why did they have to do this? Why did they must feel like they're begging to come back every year? And when it was explained to him that it wasn't a part of the budget, President Donald Trump said, well, we need to change that. We need to make it permanent funding so that they know that they don't have to worry about their next year or year after that or year after that. When he finds things that are not being done right, he changes them. And he's got a track record of doing that now, from opportunity zones to lowest black unemployment, Hispanic unemployment in history, lowest, I think, in 50 plus years for women. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just got an amazing track record of what he's done now for the black community. So when the black community and the black people that I talk to, when I share some of these facts with them and give them these details, most of them have no idea. They have no clue because they don't hear about it on their liberal mainstream media stations that they're watching, the CNN, the MSNBC. When I encourage them to go research for themselves and find, I've actually heard from some of them that have said, you know what? I had no idea of this. I really need to rethink my position.
That's right, because the media is not telling this, and instead they want us in this crazy race war, which this we talk about this a lot, not even so much on the air, but we'll talk about it off the air a lot. We're like, why are they doing this? Why do they want this? Why do they want us hating each other so much? I don't understand that.
And then they pin this hatred and the divisiveness on Trump, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
It really doesn't. And I don't understand why they want that. That's the one thing. Because I understand that there will always be racism. I get it. I mean, there will be. As much as we hate it, there will be racist. There's going to be awful people. There's going to be evil in the world, right? But I don't really think that America is a racist country. I don't. No. I don't believe that. But they will have you believe that we are. You know, they will make you believe that we are, and then they'll make you believe that we're all awful people. And that this country is a terrible place. And
they're just constantly pitting us against one another, which is exactly the opposite of what we need to be doing.
Yeah, and I have a 9-year-old. I mean, I have a 30-year-old and a 26-year-old. But I have a 9-year-old. And, I look at her growing up now, and she never saw race until probably the last 2-3 weeks, right? When I had to explain to her what riots are and what looting is and what all that. She's been asking me a lot of questions. And it's been a really, I guess, interesting is the only word that I can use to describe it. The past couple of weeks have been very strange as a parent, because you have to start explaining all the things you don't really want to explain about what's going on in the country when it comes to race, right? Because a lot of this, we've talked about this on our show, a lot of this is fueled by media, frankly.
Absolutely.
It's fueled. And that makes us crazy, because it doesn't, I was on vacation when the riots were going on, the initial week of riots. I was on vacation, and God bless her, she was handling the show by herself. Oh my God, she was having to handle so much on her own with our producer. And I was in Texas with my husband and my older kids and my younger daughter, and we were watching it sort of you couldn't help but watch what was going on in the country. But at the same time, I was trying to ignore the news a little bit because I was trying to enjoy my family the best that I could. But we were enjoying people of different colors, of different ethnicities. Everybody was getting along in the real world, right? I'm thinking, okay, everything's fine. Everything's fine where we are. And then, you know, when you watch the news, it makes they make it sound like the
world is awful.
That everybody hates everybody. Everybody doesn't hate everybody. You know, there.
And what's your experience been? Because I know one of the funniest things that you do is your Trump hats and your MAGA hats on airplanes. When you're walking through the airport and you got your you got your camera on you and you're looking smug, and I love it. But I'm just wondering, what is the typical reaction? Do you get more high fives or do you get more side eye?
You know, when I first started doing that a few years ago, I definitely got a lot more crazy looks. I'd get people look at me, look at my hat, look at me again, like, you're black and you're wearing that? And I just smile. I like to just give people a big old smile. I think it helps I'm 6'3 and about 245, so I haven't had anybody try to do anything crazy to me yet. But as of recently, before pre-COVID, when I was traveling a bunch, I get a lot more thumbs ups, a lot more smiles, a lot more I like your hats. That from people than I used to. So I think the sentiment is absolutely growing out there, and I think that the I think the fact that there've been over a million people that have tried to get tickets to the president's upcoming rally in Tulsa also speaks volumes to the growing belief that this president is on the right side of fighting for our country. He's on the right side of history, and Americans have been pent up. We have been not able to work, not able to go anywhere in an arena that only holds under 20,000 to have a million people that want to go to this arena is going to be pretty epic. And I think it's just the beginning. So I think the sentiment's growing. People are waking up to the fake news, the MSNBC, CNN, you know, they've lied so much for so long that I've had some very liberal friends of mine email me or text me over the last year during different instances and during different things that would happen, that they would say, there's just no way that this is, you know, this is true. And I can't believe I've been listening to this for so long, but I'm going to start paying attention more to what I'm saying or what I'm sharing on my podcast and have a different perspective. So I think the mainstream media, as hard as they're working to continue to push this narrative that is 99% false, it's all Orange Man bad, and not sharing any of his accomplishments, people are waking up to that, and they're looking for sources of other information where they can actually find out the facts.
Yeah. What I love, too, about you is that you are unapologetic and you're not afraid. I mean, it does help because you said you're 6'3 and you're 240. That also helps. But with us, you know, we've always been outspoken and we do our thing and we're not afraid to be conservative. There was a time where we kind of were, because we worked in corporate America and did what we do. And so we had to sort of be on the down low. But now we're out and we're proud and we're conservative and we're doing our thing. But there are a lot of people out there who are afraid to be conservative because, you know, they're afraid they're going to get
assaulted.
Yeah, with their MAGA hats, right? It's kind of like we're talking about you on the plane and stuff. And so what would you say to those people who are living and they're, because, you know, she's like, well, I don't know, Biden may have a chance because the polls. And I'm always like, don't worry about the polls, because there's always those silent people who are kind of afraid to say out loud that they're conservative, you know? And so I always, don't worry about it, because there's always the silent, there's the silent brigade that's out there that's just afraid, because the media is so awful to conservatives that I feel like those people on voting day, they're going to come out and they're going to show their support and they're going to do what they feel is right. But they're just quiet, right? They're just quiet. What would you say to those people who are afraid to say that they're conservative? I think people should be okay with getting out and saying, you know what? I don't care what people think. I'm conservative. I'm going to just say it loud and proud, you know?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot more people out there than even we realize. I think you're 100% right. There's so many people that are behind the scenes that are trying to stay quiet. I think that, you know, be smart about it, right? The last thing that we should do is put ourselves, you know, in the middle of Chaz, one of these autonomous zones, or a Black Lives Matter protest or march or whatever, wearing our hat if we don't have backup or if we don't have somebody that has our back. But yes. I say wear your hat and show your support while you're traveling, especially in the airport. I think it's got to be one of the safest places to show your support. There's security all over the place. People don't want to miss their flights. I'd love to see airplanes full of people wearing their hats and showing their support for the president. But the most important thing, as you said, is make sure you show your support and you're not afraid to go vote. That's where it's going to count. That's what's going to matter. Yeah. And make sure you're supporting the individuals in your own district. We need to get back the House and we need to keep the Senate. Mm-hmm. We need this president to have his hands unchained, unlocked, unbridled from the House blocking everything that he does. And the only way that's going to happen is if he's got the House and the Senate. Then I think we're truly going to see an amazing 4 more years of this president.
Yeah, true.
And you're heading to the rally, right, in Oklahoma?
Yes.
Are you speaking or are you just attending? What's the deal there?
I don't know. I'm on the Black Voices for Trump campaign, the coalition with the campaign. And so they're actually flying us from D.C. to Tulsa in a charter plane. And all I know is that we'll be sitting or somewhere close to the president. I don't know if that means we're in the stands or if we're on the stage. I have no idea what God has in store. All I know is I'm ready.
That is so fun.
I can't wait to see your videos from that posted on your social media, which, by the way, where is the best place that people can go to find more of you?
So my website is davidharrisjr.com. All of my social media handles, you got to have my middle initial in there. It's David J. Harris Jr. If somebody wants to get my book, you can get that at my website, davidharrisjr.com. I talk about a lot of what's happening right now. I talk about why I believe that who I believe the new KKK is. It's actually kind of taking place now, even more so than it was when I wrote it. But I assimilate the new KKK to the mainstream media and talk about how I believe they correlate together in their mission. I talk about why I support the president. I talk about what I believe the new civil rights movement is. And there's an amazing chapter that my wife actually put in there as well that I think is the best chapter in the whole book. But anyway,
so
my book, you can get that at davidharrisjr.com. And then all my social media to see my videos is David J. Harris Jr.
Fantastic.
And my podcast. I got to have you ladies on my podcast,
too.
The David J.
Yes.
Harris Jr. podcast. I got to have you ladies on.
We'd love it. We would love it. We'd love it.
Been a total honor to have you on with us today. We so appreciate your
time. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure, ladies. Thank you so much for having me. God bless
you
guys.
Thank you.
What a treat it was to talk to David Harris Jr.
Right?
Just fantastic.
No, he was amazing.
And
Love him.
If you are a person out there who is hearing him for the first time and doesn't follow him on social media, you are seriously missing out because his videos will either make you laugh or cry or feel something. Mm-hmm. And it's worth it. You got to follow him. And meanwhile, so pleased that so many of you are following us and subscribing to this podcast and leaving the nicest reviews.
You have reviews?
Oh my God.
Read some. I need reviews today.
All right. We've got one from April Michelle who says, aside from the Chicks Radio, this is my favorite podcast. That is all I need to say. So check it out for yourself.
Love.
We have somebody who calls himself, maybe herself, I don't know. It says Les W. 1947, the two sexiest women on the radio.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I don't think he gets out much. But that was so sweet. That made my dad needed that today.
I know, for real.
This week has been a doozy, and it's only Tuesday.
We've got one from JazzGirl79 who says, it's always so refreshing to listen to y'all. Sometimes I feel like I'm the only one thinking these things. You girls remind me that I am not alone.
You're not alone.
And what else? We've got something from JK.
That's some good ones.
Floyd.
Okay.
Thank you so much for making politics fun. I love listening to your WIBC show and your podcast. Unfortunately, I'm a closet conservative unless I'm around my family and a few close friends.
See, we talked about this today.
I hope you listen to David Harris Jr. You ladies are real, not PC, and I love it. And from Hokie82, love you guys. Just found your podcast and I've been binging. I am in crazy town, Richmond, Virginia. So conservatives are in the underground.
You're
a breath of fresh air. Loved your podcast about annoying sayings. How about lean in?
Oh, yeah. I hate that.
That's a good one.
Lean in? So dumb.
If you go back to the weekly COVID updates, Jerome Adams said lean in every other sentence.
Oh, my God.
And then finally, from my Po 8, thank you for saying all the things. I am thinking you make me laugh to boot. I love your Facebook Lives and this podcast. Can't wait for next week in David Harris Jr. Well,
yay!
I hope it met your expectations.
Well, it's happening. It's already happened. We just did it. He was fantastic. Love him.
Of him.
Love him.
And he's so good looking.
God, he really is.
Oh my gosh.
I know. He's easy on the eyes. That's
so
for sure.
Hot.
Goodness.
We also probably should mention our good friends at AMAC.
Mm-hmm. We are super stoked to tell you about AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. That's us. Which is the conservative alternative to AARP.
And bonus, AMAC doesn't bombard you with mailers like AARP does. They just offer you great benefits and discounts, and they do stuff like poll their members, now totaling over 2.1 million, to determine support for various legislation.
Like Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton's legislation to provide incentives for American manufacturers and reduce the U.S.'s dependence on pharma products and ingredients made in China.
And it'll probably come as no surprise that AMAC members were overwhelmingly in favor of Cotton's Protecting Our Pharmaceutical Supply Chain from China Act of 2020. So AMAC Action submitted their letter of support, which you can read in its entirety at amac.us/chicks.
Do what we did. Go to amac.us/chicks to sign up for your $16 annual membership. That's just $1.34 a month. Make your voice heard. This is no time to just sit on the sidelines. Go to amac.us/chicks right now.
That's amac.us/chicks. AMAC, better for you and better for America.